I brought my Bible this morning, but I left it on the pew because I want to talk with you about God's great second book, the book of nature. You know, shortly after I retired in 2010, every year I like to read through the Bible, different versions usually every year. And so I've read these verses many, many times, but this time after I retired, I read these verses and it really hit me, the scripture that was just read. Ask the beasts, ask the fowl of the air, ask the earth, ask the fish of the sea. Talk about an invitation to talk about God's second book. And I'll have to admit, I didn't do a sermon on nature in all of my 41 years, except I did have a little nature sermon for a graveside service, which was kind of gave me the head start in working on nature sermons. I'm on about my fourth one now, but this is the first one that I did, and I'd like to share with you this morning. First of all, I'd like to read a quotation for you. Very familiar with this one in Steps to Christ, page 9 and 10. Nature and revelation alike testify of God's love. The sunshine and the rain that gladden and refresh the earth, the hills, the seas, and the plains all speak to us of the Creator's love. God is love is written upon every opening bud, upon every spire of springing grass, the lovely birds making their air vocal with their happy songs, the delicately tinted flowers in their perfection perfuming the air, the lofty trees of the forest with their rich foliage of living green, all testify to the tender fatherly care of our God and to his desire to make his children happy. Wow. What an invitation to take a close look at nature. So I'm just going to start at the beginning of the Encyclopedia of Nature, go alphabetically through a few subjects this morning with you. Animals is the first one that I came across. Cats. How many of you have had cats for pets? What are some characteristics of cats that are quite significant? Anybody want to share? They're very independent, aren't they? All right. Anybody else? Okay. Some of them are really affectionate. Some of them are kind of aloof, which reminds me of a story in the Reader's Digest just last month or month before about this cat that was donated to a hospital for their therapy. And it really didn't pay any attention to the doctors or the nurses, not even really the patients. But when a person was about ready to die, that cat would go into that room, climb up on the bed, and lay by that person till they died. In fact, it did it so regularly and was so accurate in its predictive nature that when that cat would go into the room by that patient, they would call the family. You better come. So they have really some wonderful, well, they're therapy too, aren't they? I know my wife loves cats and dogs, and they're both very therapeutic to her. Dogs. How many of you have had dogs? All right. And one of the neat things about dogs is, you know, they've been called man's best friend. Even Harry Truman knew that. He said, as a president, presidents mostly have dogs. Have you noticed that? He said, if you're going to be president of the United States and you want a friend in Washington, you better have a dog. A comedian told this story. He says, if you don't believe that a dog is man's best friend, then you just put your wife and your dog in the trunk of your car, and then in an hour let them out and let's see which one is gladdest to see you. I wouldn't recommend that, by the way. But you know, one of the neat things I think about dogs is if you hit them or even kick them, they'll come back and lick your hand. Oh, if we could have the forgiveness of a dog, there would be a lot of more peace in this world. If we could have that kind of forgiveness for bad behavior that might be done against us. You know, there is a difference between cats and dogs. To a cat, you're a servant, and to a dog, you're a king. Have you experienced that? Wolves, they're in the same family of dogs, but did you know that wolves mate for life? Wow. And they're very faithful to the pups. Unlike, say, bears, for instance, the male bears will eat the cubs, but a wolf is not only faithful to its mate, in fact, will even, if the male or female is wounded, the partner will stay by it till it dies, and even afterwards. Well, of course, dogs do that too. They'll even come to a grave where their master had died. And you probably all heard the story about, oh, what's the dog in England? Okay, yeah. So faithful to come back to that tombstone. Horses. Now, I'm just kind of jump around, you know. A horse kind of eats grass that way. He kind of jumps from, they could stay in one spot, you know, and eat and get their fill, but they just wander around. That's what I'm going to do this morning. Horses. What a great benefit they've been to man. Before the invention of the engine, they took so much of the hard work and toil that man had to do. And horses have been great, not only pets. Any of you have a horse or had a horse? Well, not very many there. But did you know that if you put two workhorses together and one is able to pull 9 tons and the other is able to pull 8 tons, instead of you expecting to be able to have them pull, what, 17 tons? That's 9 and 8. Together, there's more pulling power. They can pull 30 tons. What does that tell us about unity and working together? What lessons we can learn? Not only about God in nature, but about life in general and even about ourselves. So that's what we'll look for this morning. Birds. Anybody have a pet bird? I have more of those again. The eagle. We can learn tough love parenting from eagles. You know, when the little bird is getting old enough, it has all its feathers and should be able to fly, the mother or the father will try to push it out of the nest. They're usually very high up. And if it's not willing to go, they'll often grab a hold of them and take them up in the air and drop them. And if they don't immediately spread their wings and fly, they'll swoop down underneath them and catch them on their back and take them back up to the nest. And they'll do that up to 14 or 15 times to get them to learn to fly. And in storms, eagles fly above the storms. Yeah, some real lessons for us, right? Geese. When I pastored in Scappoose, St. Helens area, in North Portland area, we enjoyed every fall the geese coming from the north and from down the Wood River. And they just, we lived right along the river, just a block from the river, and we'd just sit there and watch the birds fly down and then down the Columbia River. And did you notice why they fly in a V formation? Because they have discovered that when one eagle flaps its wing down, it creates an updraft. And if the bird stays right on its side, it can take advantage of that updraft. So that's why they fly in a V formation. And when the lead goose gets tired, he'll fall back and another one will take the lead and break away. And sometimes there are geese flying out to the side, and they say that the honking is usually them trying to get those teenagers to fly back in the V formation. But they can fly back up to two-thirds the distance, more than if they were flying alone. Again, what lessons of working together and of unity and helping to lift each other up, right? Oh, by the way, have you ever wondered why one side of the V is usually longer than the other? There's more birds on that side. I got you, didn't I? Have any of you seen that movie, The March of the Penguins? It's a neat nature movie, documentary on the penguins in the Antarctic. I am sure glad I'm not a penguin. I mean, for 6-7 months of the year, they just huddle together in 7-degree below weather, and they just keep moving. They just move around. The ones on the outside will, the others in the middle who've been warm, they'll move to the outside, and they'll do that all winter long. Then in the spring, the females will take off for the ocean. Sometimes up to 75 miles away they have to go to get to the ocean, hope. And then to be able to feast on the fish, you know. And they've left the eggs on the feet of the males who drop down their belly over the eggs, and they keep them warm until they're hatched and it breaks. So, like I say, I'm glad I'm not a penguin. Robins. I think they're even more predictable than probably the groundhog as harbingers of spring. When you see that first robin come into your yard, you know, and start listening for the worms, you know the spring is on its way. And robins, did you know, are the only birds that sing in the rain. Again, what a beautiful lesson we can learn. Clouds. On a hot summer day, isn't it wonderful to have the shade of a cloud? I mean, we've had a nice spring this year compared to other springs. We're usually in the 60s, 65s through May and June, and then July hits and it's 90 and 100. But this year we've had a lot of 70s and low 80s. Had a couple of days in the 90s. But on that hot summer day, it's so nice to get in the shade of a cloud. It just brings such relief. And then to think about about the recycling of water in those rain clouds. God has done such a marvelous thing in recycling our water to keep it fresh. And clouds are very interesting. I don't know if you've done this lately, but I remember when I was a kid, I liked to lay down on the grass and look up and watch the clouds and see different formations, a pig or a swan or an alligator, and imagine all of these formations in the clouds. They're so much fun to watch. There's such a variety of clouds. The cirrus clouds, the cumulus clouds, the nimbus clouds, the stratus clouds, and then combinations of those. And they're coming up with the names of new clouds all the time. So it's hard to keep up with them. But do you realize that without the clouds, there'd be no sunset? Well, the sun would still go down. But without the clouds, it wouldn't be very beautiful. I remember a Lifesaver ad of about probably 25 years or so ago. It showed this father and his son. They were out in nature, and they happened to be walking under a tree. And it was just close to the sun dipping down. And so the father said to the son, "Let's sit down here, boy. Son, let's sit down and watch." And they watched the sun dip over the horizon, and then the beautiful colors starting to come out. The reds and the blues and the greens and the yellows and oranges. And when it started fading, the little boy looked up in his daddy's face and he said, "Do it again, Daddy." Don't you feel like that when you see some things of such beauty? Beautiful sunsets. Do it again, Daddy. Wow. Flowers. Flowers aren't really necessary. Well, they kind of are when you think about pollination. But men, have you ever wondered why women love flowers so much? Listen to this clue in Ministry of Healing. As the sick grow stronger, they will venture to take a few steps to gather some of the lovely flowers, precious messengers of God's love to his afflicted family here below. And then this one in Selected Messages, Volume 2, page 356. I look at these flowers, and every time I see them, I think of Eden. They are expressions of God's love for us. And it's very human for that expression of love to be transformed into humankind. And so that's why men, ladies love flowers. But you know, I know a lot of men who love flowers too. Because they do give a message of love. And mothers, do you remember that first flower that your little boy or little girl brought to you when they were just so young? Dandelions. And do you know there's something remarkable about dandelions? If the grass grows up 6 inches, the dandelion will grow up 7. If the grass grows up 10 inches, the dandelion will grow up 11. You can't keep a good dandelion down. And believe it or not, when my father-in-law broke his hip, it was probably about 3 years ago, and when he was getting back, to, you know, able to get out, and I'd walk with him around several blocks, and it was, we live in Milt Freewater, and not far from the First Christian Church out on Main Drag, and we were walking along 6th Street there as we're going around the block. And you know there's a space between the street and the sidewalk usually of grass. And this grass was up about 2 feet tall. And there was a dandelion that was sticking up above it. And I told my father-in-law, I said, I've got to pick that. So I reached down and I picked it. I took it home and measured it, and it was 26 and a half inches long. I knew people would probably not believe that, so I actually laid it on the couch and laid it by a yardstick and took a picture of it, 26 and a half inches long. You can't keep a good dandelion down. And lilies. Notice there was a picture of the lily on the back of the bulletin. You know, the first time I saw lilies grow, you know where that was? Up at Camp Myvedon in the little eddy at the end, you know, as you turn in. Lilies, big lilies growing there. And you know what they grow out of? Mud and muck. And yet the lily turns out so pure white. You can't claim your environment for your problems. Remember, what good has come out of Nazareth? What's your favorite flower, ladies?
Sunflowers.
That was my first wife's favorite flower, too, sunflowers. When I was pastoring in Bend and Redmond years ago, back in the late 70s, we would have to drive up through Madras to go to Portland to do some of our step workers' meetings. And in the fall of the year, we would drive by these sunflower field, 80 acres of sunflowers this farmer would grow. And we could see their faces, you know, as we would go to Portland. Then on our way back, when the sun was down, they were all turned the other way. You know what sunflowers do? They follow the sun. They keep their eyes on the sun as it goes overhead. Talk about a lesson. Keep our eyes on the S-O-N. And you know what they do when they get mature and they can't follow the sun anymore? They just bow their heads. Another beautiful lesson from flowers. What can compare to the beauty of the rose? They say. Ants. Solomon says, go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider her ways. Now, why would it say her ways? How did Solomon know that the ants that you see above the ground going, getting the sweet stuff and bringing in the stuff, they're the ladies. The guys all stay underground. The male ants all are hard workers underneath the ground. And besides, if you saw a male ant, it wouldn't be an ant anyway, it'd be an uncle. A butterfly, just a quick thought about butterflies. In my second sermon on nature, I go into a lot more detail. But you know what happens when that caterpillar goes into the chrysalis? You know, it spins its own little chrysalis, and then it's in there. That caterpillar turns into a gel with a heartbeat, a thick soup. All of the worm just turned into mush, soup. And then out of that soup that has a heartbeat, the legs are formed, the antennas formed, the wings are formed. And when it comes out, this is not a worm anymore. It's a magnificent butterfly. And if God can do that for a butterfly, don't you think he can do the same for us? When I went back to Andrews in 1969, was back there 2 years for our seminary program. You remember those days, Pastor Steve. Several months went by, and it just felt like I was missing something. But I couldn't figure out what it was. I was assigned to the Gary, Indiana church. When, you know, we had to sign up to go to various churches to be mentored and so on. And, oh, to drive down to Gary, Indiana was so frustrating. I mean, we'd leave Berrien Springs and then go down Lake Michigan. And when we hit Gary, Indiana, it was like hitting a wall of smog. There was a big industry there. Forget what it was now. Steel. Was it steel? Steelworks. That's right. Pittsburgh Steels. And anyway, after preaching there one Sabbath, a lady in the church invited us to her home for dinner. And she was married to a Jew, first Jew I'd ever met. And boy, did he lay into me about us Christians blaming the Jews for the death of Christ. So it was quite a new experience for me. But as we were waiting for the meal to be fixed, I noticed above their fireplace was a picture of mountains. And something just warmed my heart. That's what I've been missing, is the mountains of out west. And I said something to her about it. And she said, oh, we were out west one time, and driving below the foot of those mountains, she said, just scared me to death. So that was something I was missing. The other thing I was missing was you couldn't go any place to just find isolation, to be by yourself. Mountains. Listen to what Ellen White says about mountains. This is Our High Calling, page 253. Our Heavenly Father has furnished us with tokens of His greatness and His majesty. Especially is this so in a wonderful degree in these mountainous regions. She was writing while she was in Europe, so she's probably seeing the Alps and seeing some of those magnificent mountain ranges. The mountains contain treasures of blessings which the Creator bestows upon the earth. God, the great architect, has built these lofty mountains, and their influence upon climate is a blessing to the world. They draw from the clouds enriching moisture. Mountain chains are God's great reservoirs to supply the ocean with its waters. These are the sources of the springs, the rills, and the brooks, as well as the rivers. And this year, did California get it? Snowpack, 55, 60 feet of snow up there around Lake Tahoe, I understand, up in the Sierras, unbelievably. And they're having flooding now. What is it? It's coming back. Starts with a T. Tulare Lake, yeah. It's coming back, and those poor farmers who were farming in that plain, I mean, it dried up decades ago, but now it's filling back up, and I'm afraid, you know, it's going to be pretty full of water for the next few months as those snow melts come down. But water, rain. The seasons, well, didn't say anything about rain, but the mountains, I just talked about the rain. But what blessings there is in the rain. Now, we lived over on the other side of the mountains. I pastored in Scappoose, St. Helens for 8 years. and I got sick of the rain. You know, over here we have irrigation ditches. Over there they have drainage ditches. I mean, to get rid of the water. It's always green over there, but there's a reason why. And in 96 especially, we had a cold freeze. The ground froze, and then it snowed, and then it rained. And the little town of Vernonia, which was part of my district, of the 1,500 homes that were there, 750 of them flooded. I mean, the river was just amazingly high. And so I was glad to get back over here. And we really enjoy the rain over here, don't we? Boy, when that rains here, it just feels so good. The seasons. I feel so sorry for those who don't get to experience all four of them. So I love it here in the Pacific Northwest. You know, we have them all. The summer reminds us of the growth of growth in our own lives, as well as our gardens are growing in the summer. And they grow to maturity. Then in the fall, reminds us of the wonders of harvest, and we can enjoy the work of our hands as we enjoy those peas and the corn and all of those good things from our garden. Then winter comes. It reminds us of the sobering thing of death when we see the leaves curl up and die. Trees lose their leaves, flowers wither and die. But then comes the spring, and this is the point I would use, especially in graveside service. Martin Luther said, "The promise of the resurrection is written not in books alone, the Bible, but in every leaf in springtime." I'd talk about, you know, some of the other things, cats and dogs, and then I'd talk about the springtime, the promise of the resurrection. Seeds. What we sow, we reap. Are you glad for that law? I am. Maybe in the spiritual realm it's not so pleasant, but aren't you glad when you plant corn, it doesn't come up zucchini? I mean, all you have to do is plant one or two plants of zucchini and you can feed the whole neighborhood. And it's remarkable how seeds multiply. And I was eating the ear of corn, I think it was one Sabbath, and I got to thinking, you know, which is the seed that multiplies the most? You know, and I thought, well, the corn, that's pretty good with the corn. And I counted the kernels of corn across the cob, it was 35 to 40, and I counted the number of rings, it was 16 to 18, so that would be anywhere from 560 to 720 kernels of corn per ear. But each seed that was planted, each stalk usually has what? At least two ears, sometimes part of a third ear, so you can double that to 1,100 to 1,400 kernels of corn off of a corn cob. And then it made me wonder, which multiplies the most? And I thought about the sunflower, which was a favorite. I never did count it, but I knew that there was something more that had seeds. In fact, I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But seeds must die in order to live. And we can't expect God to reap where we haven't sown. The stars. The heavens. You know, it's quite remarkable, this new James Webb telescope. It's throwing out the Big Bang Theory. I mean, I was communicating with a former classmate from Upper Columbia Academy. He's a dyed-in-the-wool atheist, a militant one, he says. And I'd been having some conversations with him, not on Facebook. I said, you know, my computer's not protected, so I'm not on the internet, and all I have is a tabloid, you know, so it's hard to do much of a messaging on that little keyboard. So I said, I'll do it by letter. So I sent him a letter, and we'd been communicating about creation and evolution and so on. And I think my last communication with him was, oh, he says the Bible hasn't done anybody any good. And so I told a story about this missionary. No, he wasn't a missionary. He was the chief of a Pacific Islander tribe, and the ship had wrecked, and the captain and the crew were rescued, and they brought him ashore, and the old chief was sitting by the fire reading his Bible. And the old crude, rough sea captain came up to him and he says, "What are you reading that stupid thing for? Nobody's ever got anything good out of that book." And the chief stood up face to face with him and he poked him in the chest and he said, "If it wasn't for this book, you would be cooking in that pot right now." And my last letter I got from him was, "I'm going to unfriend you." Says, "You're saying things that makes me uncomfortable." And I didn't say, "That's the Holy Spirit that's doing that, you know." Anyway, I'm not forgetting about praying for him anyway. In fact, I told him, I said, "Even though you don't consider me your friend anymore, I still consider you my friend, and I'm going to pray for you." I know that's going to make him uncomfortable. That's good, don't you think? And just think of the majesty of the heavens. You know, when I look out at the stars, and I love astronomy. I started taking biology in college, Walla Walla. And after the first quarter, I switched to astronomy. And I loved astronomy. You know, be able to go out at night and look through the telescope, 8-inch telescope that the college had at that time. Probably have bigger ones now. And to learn about the constellations and the stars and to learn about the distances in space. You know, you can't use miles. You have to use light years. The distance that light travels in 1 year at 186,000 miles a second, that turns out a light year is 5.88 trillion miles. So they do distances in light years. The distances between the stars, you know, the closest star to us is Alpha Centauri. Well, it's a group, I think it's something P Centauri that they've said is the closest one of this star system in Alpha Centauri. Somebody know what it was?
Proxima.
That's right. Proxima Centauri. And it's the closest. And it takes, you know, it takes the light from our sun 8 minutes to get here. So we see the sun not the way it is right now, but the way it was 8 minutes ago. So when you look at this Proxima Centauri, 4 light years away, we're seeing it what it looked like 4 years ago. And so some of these, when they explode, supernovas, those have happened probably 10,000 years ago, the ones that we see. Now, that used to bother me. In fact, as I was sharing the idea of creation with an uncle of mine who was not a very good Christian, and he believed pretty much in evolution. No, I shouldn't say that. He pretty much believed the Bible, but he was very strict, and I talked to him about the distance, 10,000 light years or 10,000 years for a light to get here. He says, "That's a bunch of bull." And it always made me wonder, well, at creation, when God created the sun and the moon and the stars, you know, it didn't take that long for them to get to the earth. And I think it was the light arriving here instantaneously at creation. But then it's only after creation that it takes that long for the light to get to us. But that's something I struggled with. Something else that I struggled with was, too, the death of stars. You know, I had grown up hearing that the earth is the only place where sin is. And so sin is confined to this earth. But where did sin begin? The universe, really, has been affected by sin. That's the only explanation to me about stars dying. Right? Well, don't want to confuse you too much here. But when the Hubble, right above the middle star in the handle of the Big Dipper, there's a spot where there's nothing showing at all. So they focused the Hubble telescope on that little pin spot above the Big Dipper, and it let gather light for 4 days. And when they looked at that photographic plate, there were 1,500 galaxies on that. You know, where they used to believe that the stars were so many you can't count them. It was like the sands on the seashore. Now they're saying the galaxies are like that. Talk about God's wondrous universe. Then I remember reading in a history about the Emperor Trajan, who had a Jewish rabbi as a friend. And he said to the rabbi one day, he said, you know, I'd like for you to show me your God. And so he said, well, follow me. Took him out of the palace, and it was a nice sunshiny day, and he says, look up there. And he started looking, I can't look at that, it's too bright. He says, well, that's just one of his ambassadors, and you expect to see God? Thought it was a good answer. The Earth is about 8,000 miles in diameter. Jupiter is about 86,000 miles in diameter. Our sun is 886,000 miles in diameter. So let's consider it. Our sun's about 1 million miles in diameter. It's a small sun compared to the universe. Betelgeuse, which is a red giant and a corner star in Orion. I love the Orion Nebula. But the top left star is a red giant. Betelgeuse. And if it was where our sun is today, you know, our sun is 1 million miles in diameter. Betelgeuse is 350 to 400 million miles in diameter. So if it was where our sun would be, it would take in Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and halfway to Jupiter. And that's just a small star. I mean, they're coming up, they're discovering huge stars. And I can't remember the name of the biggest one now. Do you have it? It keeps changing because they keep finding even bigger stars. So the universe is just wonderful. But when I look up, I first of all think, wow, how insignificant, you know, we are here in this earth. And sin is on this earth, and you should be glad I'm not God or was not God. Because if this planet got into that kind of stuff, I'd have just gone like that. But God sent his son to that little spot. He sent his son here. Amazing love. Trees. Ooh, I'm over time. I've been having so much fun here. I love talking about this. Let me close with trees. First of all, if you're close to a tree, where do you have to look to see it? Yeah, look up. Then secondly, they have a great root system, a foundation, don't they? What a lesson. We need that too. Good roots, good foundation. And what blessings there are in trees. You can find shade under the trees on a hot day. And I remember seeing a photograph on Facebook where it was a big, huge tree. And all the cattle were all got, everybody was all underneath that tree seeking for a shade. And that's not counting the fruit that we get. Apples, pears, peaches, prunes, plums, cherries. Just think of all the good things. And watermelons. No. Aren't you glad they don't grow on trees? God knows what he's doing. And the biggest thing about the trees is they exchange oxygen and take in the carbon dioxide. Wow, talk about recycling. The pine trees. I was walking again with my father-in-law. He broke the other hip, so he'd broken both of the hips. And he was recuperating again, and we were walking around again, and we walked by a pine tree, and it was covered with pine cones. I haven't taken the time yet to count the number of seeds in a pine cone, but a squirrel could tell you. But I decided, I mean, there are thousands of pine cones on that tree. I think that's probably the one that multiplies the most. If you find out anything different, why, let me know. I'd like to know. Then there's a willow tree and the palm tree, just beautiful trees. A willow tree is one of my favorite. Ponderosa pine, I love the ponderosa pine. And the sequoia, what magnificent trees that we probably have from the time of the flood. grand size and majestic. Did you know there's one in Walla Walla?
Yes.
By the jail. I didn't realize that till I did a tour at one of our alumni gatherings, and they took us on a tour of old Walla Walla, pointing out some of the old buildings. And I got a picture of my wife standing by this huge tree right out in front of the jail. Then I discovered there's another one. I was preaching at Northside, and I was preaching this sermon. And they said, we've got one right across the street, out towards the jail, from the Northside Church. It's not nearly as big as the one at the courthouse. But wow, as we come to an end for this sermon today, nature's just an incomplete and imperfect picture of what God is like, because nature's been corrupted by sin. So it's imperfect, as are many things of nature, because of sin. And then I had Keith put in the bulletin, you're talking about how reading God's word and observing his word and his character changes us. Listen to this in volume two, Selected Messages 356. By beholding the scenes of nature, the works of the Creator, by studying God's handiwork, imperceptibly you will be changed into the same image. You know why you feel so good when you get out in a forest or you get along the seashore? There's just something very revitalizing about nature for us, isn't there? Well, let's sing in closing, shall we? 92 in our hymnals. This is my Father's world. And I hope that sharing some of this with you today will maybe spring up a curiosity in you to learn about more things from nature.